Hello, listeners. This is Lee Price.
This is Will Ford from Football 365.
And you're listening, smartly, to At the Bridge Pod, a Chelsea FC podcast, although I would describe it as the Chelsea FC podcast.
It's in a pocket of space. Anderson came and didn't get there. Chance for Chelsea. Goal for Chelsea. Kai Havertz in the Champions League final. And Chelsea take the lead in Porto.
What's up, everyone? You're listening to At the Bridge Pod, a Chelsea FC podcast, your number one source for all things Chelsea. This episode, well, you know what happened. We played Manchester City. It did not go according to plan. So we're going to break it down, see if there's any positives to take from the game. So here are your hosts all the way from the UK, Mikey Burth and Chris. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of At the Bridge Pod. I am your host, Mikey, and I'm joined today by Chris and Burth. I wrote this assuming maybe one or the other might not have been able to make it. But how are your weekend, guys?
Yeah, not too bad. It was... Well, it was disappointing seeing Chelsea lose, but never mind. Chris, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm okay. My weekend was tiring. Two football games in one day at my age is just not a good idea anymore. I really need to start.
Let me get the violin out. Let me get the violin out. I feel today.
Oh, man. I feel like this is a segment that isn't a segment, but becoming a segment. Because someone's going to message me. Yeah, Seahawks lost their second game this season to the Vikings. 1-2 now. No, I'm not happy. It does suck to watch my franchise's defence that it looks as strong as I do after a leg day. We were built on that defence and now it looks abysmal. It's very depressing. Hopefully we're going to turn the season around. I don't have a lot of hope at the moment, but we'll see.
I think what they need to do is change formation.
Oh, that's always the answer, isn't it?
I think that's what's going wrong. That's what you need to do.
It'll get better. It'll get better next week, right? On that side note, start of a brand new week, and the At the Bridge Pod team are ready to break down yet another Chelsea Premier League game. And this time we spent our lunchtime with Manchester City.
De Bruyne for Cancelo, who's made a couple of yards, dragged his shot. Jesus turning and scoring! Champions of Europe 0, champions of England 1.
Well, if that was a lunch date, Manchester City selected the most expensive option, had us pay for it all, and then they fucked off and left us wondering what the hell happened there. It ended 1-0, Gabriel Jesus with the goal. Guys, bad day at the restaurant or the start of a worrying trend?
I think it was just a bad day at the office. I don't think... Look, there's obviously a lot of negatives, a lot of bad things that we did, but I don't think it's something that we should really worry about or start to worry about. I think Tuchel was smart enough to realise what went wrong and improve on it. And let's not forget as well, one, that Man City were very, very, very good on Saturday. They were terrific. And two, Man City are also a really, really good team. I mean, Chelsea fans on Twitter and before the game were going on as if it was going to win and was taking it for granted. And that shouldn't have been the case. Man City, they're an amazing team still. However, way you look at it, with an amazing manager. So, look, I think it was just a bad day at the office, but it was also really, really bad. But I don't think we'll play like that again this season. I think there'll only be room for improvement.
I think that's a fair point. Chris, how did you feel? You weren't too happy about that performance.
No, I mean, I've swayed back and forth on it, to be honest. Initial reaction was it shows everything that is sort of wrong with the underlying issues with the squad that we have. But then, on reflection, I think Man City do deserve a lot of credit because they was brilliant. And I think it was one of them games where we got the best of Man City. And people seem to forget that Man City at their best are the team that got 100 points in the league. So I do think most of it was how good Man City was. The thing I'm still angry about was how we approached the game. I think the most disappointing thing for me was we almost gave Man City too much respect. And he changed formation and he's got a lot of stick for that on social media and from pundits and stuff since. But I don't think it was necessarily the system, which was our undoing. It was the way we played that system. Man City left Lukaku and Werner 2v2 and we didn't play long. We insisted on trying to play out from the back, even though Man City was pressing. I didn't understand the approach. And I don't think Thomas Tuchel did either, with how animated he was on the sideline and his press conference after. It seemed like the players didn't put into action the plan that he had for the first time, and he wasn't happy about that. And I think the players almost had that belief that we've got Man City's number, and maybe taking into account the fact that we've beaten three times in a row, they thought, well, we can just go and do the same again. But it's not always the case when you play top teams. And I think, hopefully, it's very much like the what happened when we lost to West Brom at home, and we have a reaction and can go on a winning streak from now.
Yeah, I mean, you're certainly not alone there. I mean, listener Becky Sansom said we showed too much respect and seemed scared to fully attack them. It was a very interesting game. I did write it down, and you know, City outplayed us from minute one. I think that's simple to say. I mean, they were on it that day. They were determined to win any 50-50 ball. The passion was there. Lukaku and Werner, they're going to need some time to learn how to play together, I think. Now, Werner did play quite well in the second half, in my view. But, you know, he did well going on like his right foot on the right side. But he just doesn't look quick enough on the left side currently. Maybe that's because he's not confident enough to sort of cut in, take players on. But maybe he's more likely to get in front of goal from the left instead of the right. But once, I think, a run of games alongside Lukaku, hopefully we'll see something. I think it's going to be one of those where you just sort of rip the paper up and throw it in the bin and not dwell on it too much. It's one bad game. We've been amazing so far this season. I've seen some real negativity on social, as we do, saying that we were never good in the first half against this team, against that team. I disagree. You know, you don't fluke your way with five Premier League games and also sit atop of the table, which we had done. You know, look how good we were against Liverpool as well with 10 men. And exactly. I know we had to be defensively solid. It was just Man City were good. They were very high press and we weren't. You know,
I think, sorry, Marky, I just think the concerning thing for me is we have struggled this season against teams that have pressed us.
Mm-hmm.
The week before, we really struggled against Aston Villa because of their press. Their midfield was very brave and stepped onto our midfielders. And we did struggle against Villa to create clear-cut opportunities, especially first half. We really only had the one chance, which Lukaku put away, which really changed the game. Like, you look at the result and it was 3-0 and you think, oh, that was comfortable, but it wasn't. And especially first half, when teams do press us, we do make a lot of mistakes really close to our goal. And our midfield players, especially, I think, have got to learn to cope with that pressure better. I think Jorginho's got better at it, but he still lacks the sort of physical capabilities in order to hold players off when he's heavily pressed. And I think Mateo Kovacic, for everything he's good at, when teams press him, he does dribble in areas when there is no space. And he is really culpable a lot of times for giving the ball away really cheaply. Now, his dribbles look great when they come off and he beats two players and then breaks up field. But 9 times out of 10, those dribbles don't come off. Mm. And I think that's what's causing us a real problem at the minute. The decision-making when teams press against us, either playing the ball too slow or trying to force it into our midfield players rather than just playing Lukaku long or playing into a channel for someone to run onto. We need to get better at that, because at the minute, we're just too one-dimensional in terms of playing out from the back.
I'll tell you who else who I think struggles a lot from high-pressing teams. I mean, don't get me wrong, I think Man City, that's probably the best pressing performance I've ever seen from a team at Stamford Bridge. I thought they were excellent at pressing.
Yeah.
But I think Marcus Alonso really struggles when teams are pressing. When you press Alonso back to make it almost a back five and Alonso has to actually defend and be a left back, that's where he really struggles. When you press him, he isn't going to be able to beat a man. So that's when he'll try and come inside or use his right foot, and that's where he loses it. That's where he makes mistakes. That's where he makes silly tackles. And I think that's why Alonso looked so poor, because he got pushed back so far, because he couldn't attack. He looked like a left back, and that's not his position. He looked vulnerable there. And I think that's why he had such a poor game at wing back.
Yeah, I mean, it's what it is. You know, we weren't good, we were outplayed, but some of the reactions were a bit silly. We've had the toughest schedule among the big six so far, and we're 1 point away from the top. You know, everyone dropped points, which was, you know, we should have to do our job. But Man United dropped points, they lost. Liverpool dropped points, they drew. And you'd argue that they should probably, you'd expect them to beat Villa, you'd expect them to beat Brentford. So in a way, that's sort of a silver lining to what was a very bad day. There's positives, you know. Unfortunately, before I hit the positives,
Are you worried about the Reece James injury? Because he looks like he could be out for 4 to 6 weeks, according to various sources, with obviously the injury he's got with his, I think it was something to do with his, was it his ankle?
Yeah, because of his ankle. No, I don't think I am. I think if Azpilicueta plays there, I think he'll do what Azpilicueta does and put in a 7 out of 10 performance each week. And even if Hudson-Odoi plays there, look, our fixtures coming up are very, on paper, look a lot easier than our first six games. So it might be a good time to try and get Hudson-Odoi at wing-back, give him a run of game, see if he can perform at the high level, which yeah. I'm sure we can all sort of believe that he can. So it'll be interesting. It will be a miss. We will miss his set pieces, his crosses, but I think we've got enough talent to sort of fill in the gaps whilst he's injured.
What are your thoughts on the Reece James injury, Chris?
It's concerning just in the fact that we haven't got a lot of depth there. I agree with what Burr said. I think Azpilicueta will come in, and aside from the crossing, really, there's not a lot of difference, because Reece James doesn't, as I've said before, Reece James doesn't make runs in behind the opposition defence the same way Alonso does. He's not excessively quick, Reece James. He's quick enough, but he's not excessively quick. Azpilicueta will play very similar, keep the width on that right-hand side. And Azpilicueta hasn't got a bad delivery on him. The main thing that I think we'll miss there will be Reece James's height in defending crossfield balls and balls at the back post, and giving Aspi a rest, because he's not getting any younger. And if it is, worst case scenario, if it's 6 weeks for Reece James, and you look at the number of games we've got in those 6 weeks, he's going to need to come out at some point. I do think it's really opened the door for Hudson-Odoi. I think if Thomas Tuchel has any belief in Hudson-Odoi, he'll get game time over the next 4 to 6 weeks. And if he does, he has to perform. Otherwise, I think if he comes in now because of this injury and he doesn't perform, I think that's him finished under this manager. Because I don't think he sees him playing as part of the front three. I don't think he likes him as that sort of inside forward. I think it's wing back for Hudson-Odoi under Tuchel or nothing. And I think if he comes in and he doesn't perform, I think then we'll be looking at a loan move in January, maybe.
I mean, I'm still crying into my Tino Livramento buyback clause. I could be activated in January at the rate it's going, and that'd be something. All the money, we'll have him. He's probably... fair play, he's doing really well at Southampton. But I tell you what, with what's happened with the red card and obviously now an injury, he would have had his chance. But it is what it is. A positive, though. Got to end on a positive. Ruben Loftus-Cheek is going to get the nod for me from this. Everyone knows, if you're not a loyal listener, a long-term listener, you'd know about this. You're all loyal. I believe so much in this guy, and after his injury setback, we did a deep dive on the Achilles injury, the surgery, the recovery and all that. I want and I need him to do well. And you know what? In his cameo against City, he did as much as he could, given the circumstance and obviously the position he was currently playing. He couldn't really bomb up and down, as we kind of know, because he was obviously deeper than Kovacic at times. But, taking the two opportunities he was given lines up very well with a good run of fixtures in which I kind of hope he is going to play more. I don't know how you felt with his performance. Zidane,
Well, I don't think he was Zidane level, obviously, but I thought he was very, very good. And I think alongside with Silva and probably Mendy, I think he was the best player on the pitch. I think I've always said Loftus-Cheek, I wanted to see an identity from him, whether that be a number 8, a number 10 or a number 6. I always thought he'd be a perfect number 8. But it looks like under Tuchel, he could genuinely become a really, really world-class number 6, which I never thought would happen. He's got the height, he's got the strength. He broke up the play really well against Man City. And he did what Kovacic did, and he ran past players, he drove through midfield, which we all know he can do really well. His passing was really crisp. So I think, for me at the moment, he's playing better than Saul is. So I think he really should get a few more chances, especially now with our current fixtures coming up. I'd love to see him get... I'm not expecting him to play every single game, but I think the way he's performed since he's come in, why not? I think he could do just as good a job as Kovacic, given time. Obviously, he's not up to Kovacic's level yet, but I think given time in that role, I think he can become really, really, really good.
Yeah, I agree. I thought the time that he was on the pitch, he was excellent. He was the one player, I think, in our team on the day who broke the Man City press.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
There was a moment on the right-hand side where he received the ball and two Man City players went to close him down like they had done all day. And he just did this sort of pirouette-type spin and he went in between the two of them and laid off a nice simple pass and it led to an attack. And I thought, it's easy in hindsight, so I'm not saying anything against Tuchel. I think he probably should have come on in the game earlier. Mm. I thought N'Golo Kante was having an absolute shocker of a game. I think my concern with Kante is I don't think he can play two games in a week anymore. He played against Villa in the Cup and he looked at least 2 yards off the pace on Saturday. And against a Man City team that was full on high energy, he struggled on the ball. He didn't make tackles. He wasn't winning interceptions. I thought that change should have happened a lot earlier. But from Loftus-Cheek's point of view, I think he's got a good chance if he keeps performing in the minutes he gets, because he's completely different to other midfielders.
Yeah.
He's got the passing, not quite of Jorginho, but he's got a good passing range on him. He's got the dribbling ability of Kovacic, but he adds physicality. He's big, he's strong, he can hold on to the ball. When we're struggling to retain possession, he doesn't mind receiving the ball against opposition players, and he's got the upper body strength to hold those players off and buy people time. His off the ball work's really improved under Tuchel in the short space of time that he's had, in terms of interceptions, positionally, winning tackles. There is a real good chance that come the end of the season, if he keeps on like this and hopefully stays injury free, there's a good chance he could be right in there as not just fourth choice, but up towards third and maybe even second choice come the end of the season.
Oh, I thought you were going to say something about an England call-up then. I'd been that video.
Yeah, I thought that. I mean,
he played 15 minutes. He was arguably one of the better players. I mean, yeah, Thomas Tuchel, he got his tactics right in the last, I'd say, 30 minutes, but you could argue that's 60 minutes too late. And yeah, it's now 3-1 to him on the him versus Pep. But I'm not going to fault Thomas Tuchel for one it's what it is, you know. It'd be interesting to say. I think maybe Loftus-Cheek's one of them players that just needs to play with good players. And we all remember how he was it under Sarri? And he was like one of the standout stars of that season before. It was because we had that injury, didn't we, of course. And he's now, maybe he's getting up to pace. I think he's deserving the chances. He deserves it. And he might get one against Southampton, which we'll obviously preview on the latter pod, the next one. So that's going to be interesting. Do you think it's going to be him or Kante to start against Juventus? That's another one, I guess.
I'm presuming it'll be Jorginho and Kovacic.
Yeah, that's most likely.
I think it'll be that. I mean, I might be wrong, but I'm guessing it'll be those two.
Yeah, I think you're probably fair to say that.
To be honest, though, I'd like to see Loftus-Cheek start against Juventus.
I would like to see him start, yeah.
Not just for what he's done, but for that physicality, because if you look at Juventus's midfield, that's what it is. It's strong, it's powerful. They've got a lot of, you know, 6-foot-odd, almost throwback Premier League players that we used to see in midfield, you know, 6'4", strong, powerful, good runners. That's what Juventus have in midfield. I mean, Juventus aren't in sparkling form by any means, but I do think if you look at it and it was Jorginho and Kovacic, there is a mismatch in midfield in terms of physicality, and that could be a problem, although I don't expect Juventus to play much of a press, to be honest.
I think
in all fairness, you could almost play what we did against Man City, play that 4-3-2, and play Loftus-Cheek as one of the three. Gives you a bit more of an attacking option then instead of Kante. Then you can have and Lukaku, and it adds all sorts of different dynamics then.
Yeah.
It's one of them. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, you've got to worry about Chiesa, because he's their talisman at the moment, because Morata, him and Dybala are out with injury. So obviously it'd be Moise Keane leading the line. And that is a huge advantage to Chelsea. I think going into this game, I would have been happy before with a draw. I think now we have to go to Turin and make a statement and win. We've got no better opportunity than with two of their key players out. Whether you rate Morata or not, he's a key player for that Juventus side. And with him and, of course, Dybala out, you've got to take it and get those 3 points and take commanding lead in the group.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it'll be a difficult game, though. I do think
it's never going to be easy, of course.
Yeah, of course. But I'd definitely take a draw. To be honest, there's no reason why we can't win. I think it will be a very close game, though. But I'm expecting it one goal either way.
Yeah. What are you thinking on this one, Chris?
Well, I agree with you, actually, Mike. I think if you look at Juventus, they've got two of their best forwards out. And they're not in great form, like I said. I mean, they won on the weekend, but they still conceded two at home to Sampdoria. So they're not even defending very well. I think I would do what you said, Berth. I would put Loftus-Cheek in there as part of the three and have the two strikers, because we all know Chiellini and Bonucci. Lukaku up there on his own could struggle against those two. As good as Lukaku is, they are two of the top centre-backs, especially as a pairing. So I think having the two up front would be better, especially Werner's pace against those two, which is something they will struggle against now at their age. So I probably would take the draw if you offered it to me now, but I would be disappointed if we didn't go into the game to win.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that's completely fair to say. So with that, we've come to the end of another episode of At The Bridge Pod. So, of course, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram. We're trying to kick that back on. We always get it in and then we kind of sleep on it. But yeah. If you don't already follow us, you can find us by searching for At The Bridge Pod. If you listen on Apple Pods, leave us a 5-star review. It really helps out, though apparently also doesn't. I don't know, but we appreciate it. So we're going to catch up with you all on Saturday, where hopefully we've beaten Juventus. So till then, that is us signing off.